So good morning. My name is Marlene Tadros. I'm the founder of the pioneering organization Virtual Activism, which is a nonprofit organization that deals with the intersection of human rights and technology. And I will be your host today. This is the first episode of our podcast, which is loosely based on our panel, which was canceled by the UN 64th Commission on Women as a precaution against COVID. Today, we will be discussing the situation in Egypt after the Arab Spring, including gender issues. I should mention that Egypt has currently imprisoned thousands of women and men. Not only is the imprisonment without due process, but it is also for indefinite periods of time. For Women's Rights Day, we remember the women such as activist Isra Abdel Fattah and lawyer Mahinour El-Masri, as well as Sulafa Magdi, Radwa Muhammad, lawyer and activist Hoda Abdelmenem, and others. Many men, young and old, have also been imprisoned for expressing an opinion or for a post they made on social media or even for daring to speak out against injustice. I am honored today to introduce my guest, Kal Abunaga, one of the dissidents who is now living in exile in the US. Abunaga is a multi-award-winning actor, producer, and director from Egypt, and he is currently based in California and New York. He is a well-established movie star in the Middle East and is considered one of the top talents of his generation. His work extends from film, TV, to theater and radio and TV hosting. As an actor, he collected numerous Best Actor awards from his home country, Egypt, European and international film festivals also since 2001. Most importantly for us today, Naga is well known for his social and human rights advocacy and has been one of the early outspoken icons from Egypt, promoting social justice, freedom, and democratic change in the Arab world, and of course in Egypt specifically. He played a pivotal role in supporting the Egyptian revolution January 25th, 2011. He has a very admirable record of social and human rights work, especially child rights, and was appointed as a UNICEF UN Goodwill Ambassador in Egypt 2007 until 2015. I am very honored to have Kal with us here today. Hello, Kal.
Hi, Marlene, and thank you for having me. Thank you for the beautiful introduction. Sorry for the interruption. And thank you for the introduction. I couldn't really remember a lot of the things you said, but thank you for reminding me.
Well, it's an honor to have you for sure. So my first question to you is, why did you leave Egypt?
I have a very strange memory situation. I like to remember good things. My memory tries to block dramatic situations. But in this case, of course, I have to remember. Basically, a lot of people had to leave or self-exile themselves. Starting the year 2013-14, because we started feeling that there was an attack on the freedom of expression. There was an attack on anybody who has any opinion against the return of the military rule in Egypt. Right now, the atmosphere has seriously deteriorated for the freedom of artistic expression in Egypt. The situation is truly catastrophic. There's no longer, you know, space for art, any artistic criticism. indeed, between 2011 and 2013, there was a much greater margin maybe of freedom, as evident, you know, right after the euphoric feelings of removing Mubarak. But what we have right now is an extension of Mubarak, really. And all euphoric and feelings of ability to change went from one step ahead to two steps backward, one by the Muslim Brotherhood, one step backward, and then another step backward by the coup in 2013. And what we have right now is a catastrophic, really, government. In my opinion, since the events in 2013, the day of the overthrow of, you know, Morsi, and then the coup, really what we have is internal occupation of our country by its military. The Egyptian constitution still guarantees freedom of expression and artistic creation, but what is happening right now is a series of laws that guarantees not the, the opposite of that, from incarcerations of extended periods of any dissent, women or men, or and you know, abuse of power, basically. And I can go on, the list is very long. So for me as an artist, I felt that first they started stopping us from making any you know, new projects one by one, and then after a while they even took over all the productions in TV and drama and in film. And we felt at some point there will be no way of, you know, making any kind of projects. I even tried to produce films. I started producing in 2009, Heliopolis, then Microphone, then co-producing Villa 69 and other films. And my other projects that were supposed to be on the pipeline to be produced, I had to stop them because I knew there was no way I can get the permits even. And the number of permits increased to do any movie. And at some point I felt that there is no point at all in even trying. So yeah, one of the major reasons was that I felt my art will not be produced in Egypt and I will not be able to work freely in Egypt. But then things deteriorated even more and they started incarcerating, you know, any famous and pivotal, you know,
celebrities
and yeah, people of influence over the younger generation specifically, which is basically their enemy in a way, when putting thousands upon thousands of young people in incarceration as a way to basically instill fear and make people have no faith in any kind of change, and basically erode in the feelings of ability to change that we kind of gained right after 2011, which they pretty much did. But in the same way, we expected this to happen, but we didn't expect it to happen so brutally. So yeah, to answer your question in a nutshell, there was no way that a lot of artists would live and produce the art they wanted to do in Egypt. And at the same time, later on, it would became even almost a dangerous to live in Egypt and having an opinion, especially if you have this kind of influence, the level of influence. I mean, they even count more than 5,000 followers on your Twitter or social media account to be treated as a news agency. And they apply all these kinds of crazy laws to basically be able to, you know, put you behind bars until further notice, which was 6 months, now became indefinite, you know, 3 years or more. So yeah, at some point, with my number of followers on Twitter or social media, I'm sure this would have been a way, like what happened with Amr Wek, a colleague who happens to be now, you know, facing some crazy court rulings, especially the military ones of incarceration, for him having a tweet or having an opinion, which is out of this world. I wouldn't even imagine that could have been even in my wildest nightmares to happen, but it's happening.
That's true, and I think you're one of the lucky ones, you and Amr, for having left Egypt before you got arrested. I mean, after all, the Egyptian state has accused you of high treason just for speaking out.
Yeah, in my case, what I understand is it happened after I stood. I believe that we need to fight for ourselves, for each other's rights, not only for our own rights or our own freedoms. When Amru Ekid was accused and attacked for his opinion, it's so simple for me. I didn't really think twice of supporting him. And one of the ways to support him was to go to several conferences and meetings in Europe and in the US. And the one that really created a lot of reaction from the Egyptian government, obviously on the wrong direction, was when we went to a hearing, a very informal hearing in the Congress about the human rights situation in Egypt. So next, maybe in 12 hours right after that, they retaliated by expelling us from the guild, and which is actually illegal because there should be 45 days at least of.
That's the one that I was with you at, right?
Okay. When I met you in that hearing, and okay. I continued to go back to the Congress and do other things, not only with Amr, because if there is a way to change the crazy situation with the Egyptian government right now, it will not happen from inside Egypt. Obviously, because a lot of people are already behind bars, and if not behind real bars, they're behind bars of fear, because you can be incarcerated and you can get you from home. It's like almost like we went back to the black and white movies during the Nasser era, where they used to bring people from their bedrooms in the first hours of morning and dawn and put them behind the sun, as they used to say it, and basically put them behind bars. So this is happening right now, and they managed to do that I'm not saying slow motion, but in few years where the world was not really paying attention. I think if Egypt was on the international news map like it was in 2011, they would have never been able to do that. And that's what we're trying to do right now, is to keep people informed, people in the world to be aware of what's happening with the human rights situation in Egypt, so that we put Egypt and Egypt news without any confusion that the government in Egypt is trying to provide, and make it simple that we have tyranny, and we have a tyrant in Egypt trying to basically crush the Arab Spring, which I don't think it's over. I think it's still unfolding. Look what's happening in Lebanon. Look what's happening in Algeria and Sudan and Tunisia. So the whole area, and I think not only the area, but even I extend it to the whole world. Let me just put that off. Hang on a second. Sorry about that.
Okay.
So I would say that the what's happening right now in the world is, my theory is that it is actually happening as a result of what I call the internet generation. The generation who grew up with an internet, and the politics and the systems in the world, especially in the Arab world, that's why it hit us first, did not really prepare for it. And they didn't really understand the power of the people being more than the people in power using the social media. People were able to organize themselves and create protests and revolutions using social media. That was something unheard of to them. And till today, I think the world, even what's happening in Hong Kong and other parts of the world, is basically a result of having this tool, this amazing new technology, the internet. And because of that, we're seeing all these changes. And the first reaction to all of these, most of the Arab Spring countries, the first reaction from the governments was to shut off the internet, yes. Which tells you that this is what they think is their enemy. The enemy that to them is they learned the wrong lessons, obviously. They think that the internet and the social media is their enemy, and this young generation is their enemy. So instead of trying to understand that the people cannot be fooled anymore by the state media, the orchestrated campaigns, they actually thought that the best way is to cut off this internet and basically shut it down so that people don't get organized. But it's obviously too late. This is archaic ways of opposing a revolution. And I don't think it will even, what's happening in Egypt right now, they're just, shutting down portals and most of the media that they don't control, they're trying to shut it down online. But it's also an archaic way of opposing people, because, you know, even with what they're doing, and the people still can find ways to, you know, find ways to reach those portals that are banned or censored, which is unheard of in these days. So I don't want to go on too long, and I want to answer your question briefly. Yes, there was no way that the atmosphere in Egypt would let me stay there, do my art, or even live in a peaceful way.
I'm actually very happy that you brought up social media, because I'd like to speak about the media in general in Egypt and what's happening now. I mean, just for speaking out, it is all, the media is now all government owned, and they made sure of that after Sisi came to power. So now they're orchestrating smear campaigns against dissidents, you and Amr and Isra and Hazem Abdelazim and anybody who dare speak have had those types of smear campaigns. Do you want to talk about that?
Most of these campaigns, I have a lawyer who's, one of my lawyers is incarcerated. But I mean, my current lawyer right now, Tariq Hussein, is the one who's collecting all this. So I'm really, he can send you a list of them, and people, I mean, can look online and find them all. I mean, the latest was this crazy TV show that was claiming that I was being living in London to begin with, and collecting billions or millions of dollars as
well. Now we set the record straight. You're living here in the States.
I live in the States, and I don't have millions. Maybe I have a big debt, credit card debt accumulating. No, but I mean, the thing is with I mean, if you can imagine, even if we will had enough money in Egypt to live well. With the Egyptian pound floating right now, and you know, it's crazy to claim that anyone can make any money. But of course, their ways, their claim was that we are basically paid by, you know, foreign governments to instill.
That's what the smear campaign is crazy, about.
And then you know, all the other campaigns continue. They continue everywhere from, you know, talking about crazy tax evasions to, you know, I don't believe any news coming anymore from the Egyptian, government program, or basically most of the Egyptian news right now outlets are owned by the government or controlled by them, which is scary. And,
very.
And, I mean, it's also backfiring big time, because I can see from online reaction that people don't believe them anymore. But what it also did was it made people feel that they need to find other ways to find the right information, or the correct information, or at least form some kind of their own opinion. And the only way to do that now is through international TV news, or what is left on online. And that's the only way to do that. So when we go abroad and make conferences about Egypt, talk in the Congress or talk to the European Union, this is when they fear the most, because then this news, they cannot stop it. Otherwise, they have to basically shut down all the broadcasters, BBC, CNN, you know, The Guardian, The Independent. You know, this is their fear. And I think this is where we should focus. We should make sure Egypt news is mainstream in the international, trusted broadcasters and newspapers, because that's the only way the Egyptians will know that their catastrophe is being understood, and it can never stay unheard.
They smeared even those, by the way. I mean, several times they've attacked the BBC, and they've attacked the Guardian, and with the same types of campaigns. It's actually pretty funny.
Yes.
When I was an activist in Egypt, we always used to say, you know, let us handle our own stuff inside Egypt. And that was during the Mubarak era. Now, I'm not sure that this is the way to do it, because anybody who opens their mouth now are just imprisoned and, like you said, taken behind the sun. So what do you think? I see that you also believe that we should speak out, those of us who are outside and abroad and in exile, should be speaking out. Do you think this is helpful?
I think it's the only way to change the status inside Egypt right now. I don't think anybody inside Egypt can do anything except basically to try as much as possible to stay safe, because you are simply not safe if you are, say, having any opinion against the government right now in Egypt. And that's scary. We have people behind bars who are writers, you know, celebrities, even, you know, presidential candidates, from the whole range. It's basically the message that this regime is trying to send everybody in Egypt is, don't open your mouth, otherwise you're going to be sent behind bars. Or if not, if we cannot put you behind bars, we're going to start a character assassination campaign against you and smear campaigns in their TVs and newspapers, which is happening to all of us who are outside. So this is a typical regime that is really frightened for the time at the moment, which will happen eventually, of where the Arab Spring rules, where basically the revolution ends up having the powers, when the power of the people goes back again to be more than the people in power. What we have right now is basically the return of Mubarak, regime in multiplied by 1,000.
And, exactly. Yes, it's worse. It's a lot worse.
Yeah. So what they're trying to do is just to stay in power as long as they can and gain all those, gains, as they call them, muktasabet, whatever they call it. Yeah. They think they won, and this is their way of telling us that we won. So the only way that we can fight this is by, first of all, going back to history and see what happened to all those, we talk about the Arab Spring. There's the very famous situation which happened in Prague, the Prague Spring and the Velvet Revolution, which is pretty much going almost chapter by chapter equivalent to what's happening to us, from the young people starting this revolution to the tanks in Prague from the Soviet Union, to how they kind of almost crushed it and put writers and celebrities in jail that ended up writing the basics of basically the return of democracy and ended up with the Velvet Revolution at the end. And then he became one of the very famous activists, became the president of the country afterwards. So history teaches us that no matter what, revolutions and springs and noble asks will always win. The only thing is that what happened back then and took maybe 20 years to reach power and change, the switch of power happens, maybe hopefully in our times take less. And I think they are aware of that. And this is why they're a bit frightened. And this is why I think they're brutal. And this is why they're putting thousands upon thousands behind bars, because that's the only way they can actually stay in power. They know that there is a critical number of people who are, if they're not afraid and they have a voice, will change situation. If people are given the right basically to protest, things will change eventually. So what they're trying to do is to make sure people don't have the right to protest, and those who have an opinion are being put behind bars, or at least put them behind bars of fear. And that is not a sustainable situation. Everybody knows that. The younger generation, the Sanawiya Amma, the high school students, ended up having a protest in the midst of the all the rules against protest because of some corruption with their iPads and how they had to fail exams because of the corrupt iPads and network problems with the a year and a half ago. So no matter what you do, you'll always have a new generation that doesn't really abide by the fear tactics that you are playing, and that's history. So history teaches us that no matter what, there will be a moment where these crazy tactics of oppression will fail, and they're only trying to gain time. And all we can do right now is to make sure that this time they're trying to gain is at its minimum by making sure that the world is ready and knows and not confused about what's happening in Egypt today.
You're a lot more optimistic than I am.
We don't have the luxury not to be optimistic because our brothers and sisters and comrades from the revolution are being incarcerated right now, including very close friends, not only younger people that we don't know, but we are so. But some of them are from all walks, from opposition, from people who were actually were pro Mubarak, from everybody. This is a situation where everybody should unite against this regime. The craziness is with if you claim that you are the only one hurt or the most hurt person, group, because what's happening right now is this division and polarization that basically is the fuel of keeping the status quo. You cannot win any of our causes with fighting only for ourselves or our groups. We have to fight for each other. And this is, I think, is the key right now that everybody is finally trying to grasp and understand, that we cannot fight just for our group. We need to fight for each other.
Yeah,
we need to fight for each other.
This has always been the problem.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the extremist or the Muslim Brotherhood kids were the first ones to leave. If you remember in Tahrir Square, most of the kids who were so called or under the Muslim Brotherhood or any kind of extremist or religious groups ended up leaving them because they didn't really understand what was happening. They were left behind in archaic times of not understanding that we can change things. And when we started changing things, they finally joined the movement. And I think now they are finally, again, the management or the directors or the heads of Muslim Brotherhood or all those groups are finally now seeing that they have misunderstood again what's happening after the coup era, that they really needed to understand they cannot just fight for their own rights of freedom of expression. They should fight for everybody's rights for freedom of expression. So I think right now there's a learning curve. It took longer than I expected, to be honest, because of the archaic heads of the Muslim Brotherhood, which I wish they understood earlier the lesson, but I think they're getting it. And the only way forward right now is that we make sure that we fight for everybody. We fight for everybody's right and not to exclude anybody.
Yeah, still very optimistic. That's fantastic. So let me switch a little bit and ask you about gender issues and gender equality in Egypt. Of course, we can see equality in everybody being imprisoned equally. But beyond that, where do you think we stand now in Egypt?
One of the things I learned after the 2015, I started seeing that everybody's the ceiling of their top hopes kept going lower and lower. And I remember very well, we had almost, you know, the sky was the limit with what we can, you know, imagine for the new Egypt that we have just started to feel that we belong to, and felt that we are able finally to feel that we belong to this country and we can change it. So these hopes kept going lower and lower and lower over the years with the oppression of this regime that we have right now, until almost now we can't even have any kind of hopes. Our hopes are minimal. Basically, we just want our, you know, friends out of jail. I mean, most of our energy today is campaigning to bring, you know, Shadi Abu Zeid out of jail, or, you know, names that, like you mentioned a few names in the beginning. I don't want to mention names because there's a list of 1,000 names.
Yeah,
I can.
Exactly.
Can.
Exactly.
And I we did this for example, few, and we were able to get them out by campaigning for a year or two, basically to bombard any Egyptian official when they go outside in any official setting, to be bombarded by questions. Why is the 16-year-old kid in jail? Or why is Fahmi, the journalist, is in jail? Or until we can get them out. And we got, how many did we get out? Maybe a few here and there. And these are great successes because it shows that we can actually put pressure. But this is, we ended up putting all our energy, and our hopes were basically to get them out of jail, or get them out of unfair situations. Now, that made me realize that we should actually never forget what were our hopes and ideals that we were really dreaming of. So here comes the answer to your question about gender issues. One of the beautiful things that happened right after 2011 is that a lot of the gender issues came out. A lot of women stood against the oppression. A lot of women were actually pivotal in 2011 and all the protests that we had in the beginning, first in 2 years, until they started coming back against women by, you know, adding all those the chaotic situations, which is actually the strategy of the government, unfortunately, is create chaos so that people are afraid. And when you create chaos and people are afraid, then you can actually divide them and conquer. And that's what happened in most of the situations where the polarization was there, when Rabah was there. And this is how they basically managed to divide people. But the gender issues and the gender equality and all these great hopes for a new Egypt were already there. And I learned the lesson during these years that we should always go back to the and revisit what we wanted, what we hoped for Egypt. And there is a generation that is actually ready to address these hopes and goals. So yes, of course, all those gender issues were addressed, and I wanted to go back and revisit them every now and then in any discussions on social media. Although I knew the government will take that and twist it and use it against you. But you know what? It's also a sign of strength to show that you are not letting go of your dreams. You know, sure. If you're talking about sexual orientation, if you're talking about equal rights to women, if you're talking about child rights, if you're talking about women rights, all, you know, the rights of most of these rights that we talk about that were now became not our priority should come back as our priority. And that's why in any, you know, campaign or an event or a social media discussion, I keep revisiting what we hoped for. And I keep making sure that this is the Egypt we want, so that we never forget where we are coming from, the nobility of our cause. Aish harriya adala ijtimaiya karam insaniya, the main goals, you know, bread, freedom, social justice and dignity is actually there, and we should always fight for having those always back on the table in any discussion, which brings us to gender issues and some issues that sometimes we never really had the time to discuss it, because it was very short-lived time where we were able really to, you know, openly discuss these issues without the what we call the old guard rhetoric, you know, fighting it.
rhetoric. Absolutely. So you don't, I mean, this is brilliant, but you don't see, for example, because many people now say that the regime is having more women in parliament than ever before, having more women ministers than ever before. Do you see this as significant in any way?
Yes and no. It depends how these women and how it's not about when we talk about gender issues and gender equality is about rules, about laws, about ethics. And I don't see a lot of the unfortunately, a lot of the women who are I hear them speak as speakers in the parliament or as ministers. They have disastrous, you know, opinions about gender issues in general. So it's not really that the numbers, but more the quality of the people that I'm looking for to represent these ideals. And I, unfortunately, all what I'm seeing is more and more old guard rhetoric, even if they were women talking about or in positions of ministers or in the parliament. But what they're saying, what their policies is the problem. We don't have a problem of a number of women in Egypt. We have a lot of women who are capable and it should be in these positions. But the problem is in the policies they are adopting. And the policies we have is horrendous. To start from how they perceive how they perceive, for example, gender issues. How do they perceive child rights? How do they perceive women's safety? How do they perceive any issue? If you talk about street children or, you know, poverty, go to any UNICEF project that I worked with and look what's happening to it right now, from FGM to clean water, to safe, violence against children or women. There's no policy anymore protecting them. They're actually going backward. And the more you hear them speaking, the more you feel like they have no idea what what the world is talking about these days. It's almost like going back to I don't know, hundreds of years. So
yes,
it's a little bit alarming that people exist in these positions with such ignorance of gender issues and policies.
Yep, that's wonderful. So, any final thoughts?
The thing is, we don't really have the luxury not to be optimistic, because really, history teaches us that no matter what, most of the beautiful, huge, noble revolutions, like the French Revolution, like the Velvet Revolution, all of them ended up winning at the end. Although they went through a horrible, dark period of oppression, repression, putting all the, you know, iconic people behind bars, and history teaches us that no matter what, those oppressors end up going away, and the nobility and the noble causes at the end win. And I believe that we had one of the very important and noble revolutions in Egypt. And I don't think it's over. I think the Arab Spring is still happening, alive and kicking in every little country around us, not only in the Arab world. I believe it's happening all over the world. It happened in the Arab world because it was the most repressed and oppressed by state media and archaic governments. So we were the first ones to sense these big changes that will happen eventually in the whole world. So finally, I would like to, you know, end up again with my first note, which is we don't have this really luxury not to be optimistic, because we need to give those who are now behind bars, incarcerated, the hope of change, because this is the only way that they feel that things can change to the better. Otherwise, they hear day in, day out in Egypt, broadcast and news, the state-sponsored ones, that it's over, that there is no hope. And that's what they want to want us all to believe, which is, of course, not true. And history teaches us the opposite of that.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time. And thank you for your very insightful thoughts.
Kala Bunaga.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marlene.
Okay.
All right.